Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we are so, so grateful you've joined us today for another episode of the Mama Bear Dares podcast, where we get to interview on Mondays incredible women doing really fascinating things with their lives. Sometimes it's as simple as just loving their family and friends really, really well, right? If we're not asking for like big, huge acts of love and compassion. Oftentimes the things that inspire people the most are just how women look at the world. And we're so lucky that we get to interview so many extraordinary women with this kind of outlook on life. On Wednesdays, you've come to us on a Wednesday. On Wednesdays, we get to do a little mini where Leslie and I just kind of talk about topics that you guys have asked us to talk about through email or our social media channels, or ones that we've found ourselves talking about, right? Just the two of us about how we can do better now that we know better. And today is one of those such topics. Is it not,
Yay,
Leslie?
It is. And Tessie, it's the holiday season. It is officially December. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I have turned on the Christmas music.
Oh,
we have put up the tree. Mm-hmm. We're making all kinds of plans. We've been watching Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. And I am just so loving it all right now. Mm-hmm. The lights and the time spent together and all the coziness. Mm. I'm also loving pretty much every other snap that you send me is a picture of you in one of two pairs of Christmas flannel Christmas PJs.
I'm happy you noticed that there are two different pairs. I'm out of
for
them
a while
today,
there
though.
Weren't.
Oh, you're right. For a while, there was just the one.
Right, but I'm enjoying that about this season as well. And you and I are both coming down from this annual fundraiser that we have put on for the last 8 years with a really great group of women. And honestly, I think that's why I'm feeling so great right now.
It's because
it was so intense and it was wonderful, but I'm just so ready to relax now.
Yeah, the water party comes at a really interesting time because we always do it the weekend before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so it naturally, like, we get our totals right around Thanksgiving, and there's so much to be thankful for. $41,000 was raised this year, Leslie. So cyber high five on that. And it was really extraordinary. And it always feels so good to enter the season after that, where we saw so many people give joyfully and with great passion, you know, of their time and their treasure and their talent, all of that. It's just, it's so good.
It is. It's so good. So good. But you have big news too, that you're kind of like you're a little bit down and relaxed and, you know, you've come down from the party.
Yeah. And then my face is also breaking out, which is because.
Tell us why.
My husband, who is, I've always known, very incredible, just accepted a job as a CEO of a new Y, which is so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be moving to kind of the greater Kalamazoo, Michigan area in January. So all very exciting, you know, all very exciting. But even the stress of that cannot get me down, because the holiday season is my favorite for all the reasons you just described. The lights, the coziness, the flannel PJs. I love it. I love it. And you and I always talk about winter just makes us so reflective, you know, and it really amps up in December. It's colder out. My kids' activities usually take a little break for a few weeks. Schools are out for a few weeks. So I get more reading done. I get hopefully a little more writing done. I love it. I love it so much. And I notice that you are like me, because you have done some work for this for this podcast episode. You did some research. You know, I love it. I loved watching this shape up. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what it's going to be about?
Okay, so today's mini is going to be, it will include talk of food as activism.
Right.
And you're right. This, probably when I first started writing all of this, it was a 2-hour podcast. And I think we've gotten it down a little bit. But it's a big topic that I think is relevant every single day. But because there is so much focus on feasting and eating during the holiday season, that I think this is a good time to kind of dig deep into how our mama bear can be engaged through cooking and eating this holiday season and beyond. I think it's really interesting that how, as humans, we associate the holidays with feasting. I think this is a thing. It's always been a thing through time and space. So many ancient texts, I mean, going back to the beginning of time, you'll find banquets and feasting to celebrate holidays and to mark important moments. It's historical, and it's fascinating to me to read about food and how these feasts that we tend to gather together and have, how they've looked different throughout the years and throughout the world. But there's a really basic truth that we all kind of live. And it's that we gather together over a table. Mm-hmm. It's not just historical. It's not just American. All over the globe, people gather to eat. So I think food is a great opportunity to engage the mama bear.
Yeah.
When I was in Tanzania a couple of years ago, it was right after Easter. And I love the story. I was actually there interviewing, trying to get a sense of how, as an organization, Empower Tanzania, that I was traveling with, how we measure success in our programs. And so we're kind of collecting these anecdotal stories. And I asked her, I was like, how has your life improved since you've entered this program that's focused on training and supporting farmers? And it was a great conversation. But basically, through the translator, she said, I cooked 3 chickens for my family to eat on Easter Sunday. And so this is how she communicated her glee and her success. It was a holiday, and she and her loved ones feasted. So even families who are just making, you know, a few dollars a day find ways to mark holidays with food.
Yeah, and I mean, I am just so grateful for that so many people mark all the things with all the foods. I am so happy about that. But it is, you're so right. It's universal. We experience this in Ethiopia. We experience this in America. Everywhere you go, a celebration, bring food, right? Or a mourning, bring food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why when you and I were talking about our plan for some of these mini episodes, we thought talking about food as a political act of justice would be a good idea.
Yeah.
We have a podcast coming up with Tatiana Amico, who's a health and life coach. She offers incredible insight and practical tips aimed at our individual health and the health of our families. And we get into the food aspect a bit there. It's a great interview, but she kind of focuses on us as individuals, the impact of what we eat on our bodies. So, you know, like the additives, the preservatives, the processing, all of that, and how to kind of engage with all of those for the health of your family. That's coming up. We didn't want to talk about that today, right? We wanted to get into more of a food as activism movement for the larger good that expands out through our family. Starts with the family and then expands out. And we just think this is so important. I can't wait to get into it. But I feel like people would be like, oh, here goes Leslie and Tuzzy. Maybe that's just our husbands. Let me get on these things. But this is the thing, social activists around the world, right? They see food as a means for creating social equality, too. This is not just us.
Right.
I think it's important to know that food can be eaten and it can be boycotted. We just saw what was going on with DAPL. Like, there was a small success there, right? Things can be boycotted in a way that protests political or environmental events. A hunger strike, it's a real political means of action. Like, these things can affect real change.
Absolutely. And obviously, we're not promoting a hunger strike on today's episode. But we are going to engage our mama bears in this topic. It's one of those things that seems sometimes like it's just this huge issue and that it's too big to touch. And we certainly don't want to be doomsday about this topic, but I do think that the way that we make and consume food in this world of ours can be problematic, and it's an area in which we can engage our mama bears for social change. Our food system is troubled, you guys. We've all heard about GMOs and bad labor practices, and these resonate with us. But how do we act? What do we do as individuals? I think we should discuss it.
Let's discuss.
Okay, so like so many of the things that we talk about on this podcast, Tessie, we can leverage our spending power and use our pocketbooks as impetus for social change. Mm-hmm. What's wonderful about living in a capitalist society is we have choices. We have so many choices. And consumers play an essential role in diminishing the food industry's injustices. I think this first resonated with me years ago when I started to learn more about the production of chocolate. This is a really, it's a sad kind of, to borrow Al Gore's words, it's an inconvenient truth.
That is the first and possibly last time we'll say this on the podcast, to borrow Al Gore's words.
That's so true. Funny. But what I reluctantly learned was that so much of the chocolate that we consume is cheap because it's produced by subsistence farmers who are surviving hand to mouth. Often these families, these farmers and their families are malnourished. They're not able to make a living. 70% of the world's cocoa is in West Africa, and specifically in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. And it's estimated that there are 2.1 million West African children doing really dangerous and physically taxing work of harvesting cocoa. Mm. And, you know, you have to point out then, you think about that when they're, these kids are out doing this work, they're not in school.
Right.
And it's a huge industry. It's a $100 billion industry. And often children are trafficked to the Ivory Coast from all over Africa to farm cocoa. You know, they're being held really as slave laborers.
Right.
This kind of blew up about 15 years ago, and it started to get some media attention, but it's still happening now. And you probably can hear my mama bear. She's getting a little bit hot.
Hot under the collar.
But I've linked a bunch of resources in the show notes just if you want to learn a little bit more about it. But what can we do? We can refuse to buy chocolates that are not fair trade and slave free. Done and done.
Check and check. Yeah. We did a whole podcast on this where we talked about fair trade in episode 79 about compassionate consumerism. Same kind of thing. And just as a refresher, fair trade is an international trading philosophy that supports sustainable development and better conditions for marginalized producers throughout the world, while simultaneously offering unique, well-crafted products that consumers can feel good about purchasing. So in this case, we're talking about chocolate. There's coffee. Mm-hmm. There are things you can consume that we talked mostly about, you know, buying actual gifts, like handmade gifts, but food, things you consume are also fair trade. And I love advent calendars for my kids. Mm-hmm. Always loved them as when I was a kid as well. And I found some that were fair trade chocolate. And every time you take back one of the windows, it teaches you how to say Merry Christmas in 25 different languages. I mean, Cool. That's, I know, it's amazing. So while we're talking about how certain foods are produced and the ethics involved, like fair trade, I've said it on the podcast so many times, but we really can't talk enough about how much power we yield with our forks, right? Mm-hmm. Just a simple act with our forks. And one of the ways Zach and I wield that power is by being plant-based. About 8 years ago, we first went vegetarian because we learned all the ways factory farms were destroying our planet and also creating a host of issues in our physical bodies as humans. Your mama bear was on fire right now. My mama bear was definitely on fire then. It just ignited this crazy passion for both of us, really. It wasn't just me either. And because there were so many families like ours who were opting out of paying for meat raised on these factory farms, we've seen, right? We've seen this boom of grass-fed beef and grass-fed chickens, a shift that has been shown to be healthier for planet, humans, and animals. And this happened, you guys, and it continues to happen because people are using their food as activism. You know what capitalistic societies are forced to listen to? Dollar bills, y'all. That's what they're forced to listen to. It's the best way to vote, right? We'll link a few great articles and some of the documentaries we've talked about before on the podcast as well, in case you missed those, in the show notes. So make sure you check that out. That our show notes this week, Leslie, I think they're going to be amazing. You're going to want to see
many
these.
Links. So much reading to do, you guys.
But that said, I mean, I totally get not everyone is going to go on a hunger strike or become vegetarian or vegan, right? I get that. But I think there's still so much more that can be done in your home to use food as activism, don't you think?
Oh, totally. You're so right. It definitely, it's a different kind of activism, but it does. It yields tremendous paradigm-shifting results, really. Mm-hmm. And that was a great example of how much more available things like grass-fed beef are now than they even were 8 years ago.
Right.
And definitely this can be done from home. So I've forever said that some of the most holy occasions of my life have been at my home around a table with people I love. Mm-hmm. So there's this undeniable kind of spiritual aspect of food and gathering together at a table that promotes community and relationships. And so, again, it's a different shift on food as activism, but I think so much goodness can come from celebrating together at the dining room table. So regardless of what's on that table, like the first step is just sort of gathering there for this spiritual nourishment that can then spread out into the world. Honestly, I see a glimpse of heaven in my eyes when I sit down at a table with delicious food and wine and the people that I love. And I just feel like the relationships that are groomed there are so life-giving. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is kind of an act of creation. Mm-hmm. So I guess away from home that we can activate our mama bear is think about, like, do you have a long dining room table that you don't use that often? I think we can engage our mama bear by simply inviting friends over. And whether or not you like to cook and you want to prepare a grand meal, or if you just want to order takeout, gathering over food to celebrate the relationships and kind of give thanks for those is an act of you know, is it an act of justice? It's an act of something. It's an act of creation. It's an act of beauty. Uh-huh. And I think really in society, we're so busy. And so it can kind of be an act of resistance to that kind of cultural norm. It's an act of rebellion.
It is. Or we just tell ourselves that so that we can continue to invite people we love over for dinner. One of those things are true. Or both.
I think both. It can be both.
I remember having little bitty babies, and the idea that I would invite more people over and feel so good about having like all this extra stuff to do mm-hmm. would have been way too daunting. So I totally get if that's your stage of life, right? Because it's hard to find the freedom to either cook or organize a meal sent in, the confidence to invite others into your home. But you can still really celebrate the relationships between the people you would normally invite over, and even between your farmers and communities, relationships between the food and our bodies, between food and the earth, and between farms and our ecosystem by practicing a mealtime meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hoped that I like said a lot of words so they wouldn't hear me. They wouldn't get excited, too nervous about this mealtime meditation. But it's so simple
nice
and it's so powerful. Yeah, distracted so they could really get into it here. But you actually wrote a whole article about this for a Healthy Living magazine. Again, we'll show that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm,
You know, and our listeners know that we love talking about meditation. So I really think you should lead us through one that was in that article. It's super simple.
It is. It's really simple. And again, you're right, Tessie. Like, if you're not up for, you know, inviting others into your home and kind of creating this food as rebellion in a busy society, this is another way that you can act with just your little family, no matter how old your kids are. Let's use the example of a sweet potato, okay? Because that's on the menu this week.
And you
house.
Love sweet potatoes.
I love sweet potatoes. But you can sit down with your family and just lead your family in tracing the meal, or in this case, the sweet potato, back to the source. So when you do this, you'll see that it involves the labor of many hands. A farmer planted the slip and then tended the crop. Slip is like the seed,
right?
Kind of for a sweet potato, just FYI. And then think about this crop was grown, and then a driver transported it over the roads that were built by crews. It landed in a loading dock where other people unloaded bushel after bushel of sweet potatoes. And then the store clerk, think of your hometown grocery store where you buy your food. A store clerk found the potato, its home in the produce section, and then a cashier rang it up on a machine that, I mean, think about all the people who've designed this machine.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else likely placed the sweet potato into your bag. And I think, you know, you can kind of do this with any type of food, and you might feel a little bit silly at first, but by pointing this out, and by pointing out what it is that we're actually eating for our dinner, I think we can become just a little bit astonished by just that web of work that goes into, in this case, getting the sweet potato to the plate in front of them,
mm-hmm.
in front of you. And so, again, I think this is food as activism. You're declaring your values and your place in this world to your children, who are the next generation, who will grow up to value relationships and the equitable treatment of all people and the appreciation, really, of just how we care for our earth.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I think if we can get past, you know, maybe you might feel a little goofy the first time you do it, but just to slow down and really appreciate the journey that each item of food is on, really.
Well, and it was interesting because the kids and I were talking at the dinner table a few nights ago, and my oldest, almost 14, said that their health teacher had said, "What animal does ham come from?" And he and one other kid were the only two who knew the answer. So this is another way we can use food as activism. If they don't know that ham comes from a pig, they don't know how that pig was raised. They don't know how a pig mm-hmm. was slaughtered. They don't know about the farmers tending to the pigs, you
right.
know. And it's easy in our modern industry to be really far removed from our food sources. But I think that's such a beautiful act of rebellion to remind everybody, this is how it was made. This is what the earth is doing to
mm-hmm.
bring you this one potato or to give you this slice of ham.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think you're right, Leslie. That's a beautiful thing we can do to our kids. So
it is.
Yeah, thank you
All
for
right.
that little meditation.
You're welcome. Maybe it's meditation.
All right, let's talk about what we can do outside of our homes. That was all inside. I think there's time for both. Whether you have littles, whether you have bigs, whatever, we can activate on behalf of our family and organize within our community to reach even more people. So
mm-hmm.
we're going to assume you've already thought of this first suggestion, listeners. We won't spend a lot of time here. But volunteering to serve meals at your local shelters, do that. Do that first, you know, and bring your kids with you. You can also support your local pantries and food banks with money and with food donations. These are beautiful and simple ways to start that can involve your entire family.
Yes, certainly. Beyond that, I think we can use food as an act of love when it comes to our neighbors and our friends. Again, this is really simple, but who doesn't love a baked good on a blustery day? My neighbor just delivered a batch of a loaf of pumpkin bread the other day, and I almost cried. It was amazing. So bake with your kids. Again, this is an activity you can do together. Deliver something to your neighbor. I love how in the book Carry On Warrior, Glennon Doyle Melton, she wrote about leaving homemade treats for her neighborhood garbage collectors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's adorable and so sweet and so powerful. And this, honestly, this might be all you have the capacity for right now,
yeah,
you know, depending
right.
on what your life is like. But we say it all the time here on the podcast, small actions done with great love are crucial to this world.
Oh, crucial. Amen to that. I recently read that 1 in 6 Americans don't have enough food to eat. I think you read the same thing. 1 in 6
mm-hmm.
in America.
Mm.
it's so strange to me that food insecurity is a thing in America. We drive huge cars and watch huge TVs, and yet one in six people don't have enough food in our own country. That's just mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
And Leslie, you were actually telling me when we were talking about this podcast about an article in National Geographic that focused on Iowa, where you live, where I'm from. Iowa, as most people think of it too, but it has some of our nation's richest lands, and farmers grow corn and soybeans used to feed livestock, make cooking oil, and produce sweeteners. That's what this rich land is being used for. You know, before, farmers were just diversified, but now it's less so, and less is getting to the table than ever before from these really rich soils from Iowa. And this isn't about the popular idea that you and I both love, the farm to table kind of movement, the eating, right? It's about the 1 in 8 Iowans who go hungry. 1 in 8 with this rich with this rich soil around them. It's just mind-boggling, especially because children are the most vulnerable to these food insecurities. And I don't know, it just it totally bothers me that most of that really beautiful soil is going to farmland for livestock, cooking oil and sweeteners instead of actual food.
Yeah, it is. It is totally shocking. And we'll link that National Geographic. It's a really cool article that focuses on some families in particular and their experiences. But you guys, this is America. And I know this episode could last forever if we were to go into geopolitics and world hunger throughout the planet. We do want to stay focused here, but it is. It's kind of one of those jaw-dropping statistics.
That's why programs like SNAP are so important and why we need to be vocal about keeping these kind of safety nets intact. For those who don't know, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is SNAP, is a government program that offers nutrition assistance to millions of eligible low-income individuals. It is the largest program in our nation's domestic hunger safety net. So let's get real here. I mean, I don't think anyone will be surprised to hear that SNAP hangs in the balance with our new administration. So we really have to think about food policy overall. What does it mean for food production if we close our borders?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, according to one study by the American Farm Bureau Association, closing our borders would mean a 3% reduction in grain production, a 27% reduction in meat production, a 31% drop in vegetable production, and a 61% drop in fruit production. So closing our borders then would leave thousands more without access to the food they desperately need.
Yeah, another national issue is that of school lunch, and we're moms, so I feel like this is kind of hits close to home. We really need to improve and expand the school lunch program. I think first shout out to Michelle Obama, who, you know, and the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. This act was passed in 2010, and it's the legislation that authorizes funding and sets policy for the USDA's core child nutrition programs. So honestly, I had to look this up because I was kind of unaware of what these programs actually are. But they're the National School Lunch Program, the School Breakfast Program, the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, which we often hear of as WIC. Mm-hmm. And it's also the Summer Food Service Program and the Child and Adult Care Food Program. So basically, this legislation has improved upon and provides this hunger safety net for millions of children mm-hmm. in America. And I know, Tessie, I see this playing out every single day in my own neighborhood. My kids get free lunch and breakfast at their elementary school. And another school in our neighborhood is home to the summer food program mm-hmm. where, again, kids who don't have food at home can come and eat lunch during the summertime. Our kids, even though they could get a free lunch, I pack it every day for Sintayu and sometimes for Eli, and I always feed them breakfast at home. I am in the position to do so.
Right.
You know, many of the kids that my children go to school with are not. And that, too, makes my mama bear come out. I don't know. I just, what if these kids who I know and love, like, what if they didn't have access to this program at their school? It's troubling, really. And so I'm glad to know that these exist, and I want to keep an eye out and make sure they continue to exist. I also do think that school lunch needs to be healthier. I want these kids to have better access to fresher fruits and veggies and fewer, you know, additives.
Yeah, I pack my kids pack their own lunch because I know that they focus better in school with sound nutrition, but that is such a luxury. And why in the world is nutritious food a luxury in our developed country that does have access to so much rich soil, right?
Mm-hmm.
This seems totally preposterous. And what we can do as mama bears, because I'm sure our listeners are like me a little bit when you start thinking about this issue and you start to feel overwhelmed, we still can act, right? So what mm-hmm. we can do as mama bears is contact our congressmen and women and demand that this program stays in place, the SNAP, and that the nutritional quality of the food improves. This doesn't have to be political, okay? Too many children are victims to not having enough food and or only having access to junk food because it's all a parent can afford. Though politicians want to make this political, is it really political to want every child in our country to have access to healthy food? I just don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, no.
I don't think so.
No.
So I think you bring up a really good point. Making our voices heard when it comes to policy is really, really important. I once had the chance to have dinner with Bill McKibben.
He is
an American environmentalist. He's an author and a journalist. He has written extensively on the impact of global warming. He is the founder of 350.org, which is a global grassroots climate movement that holds leaders, primarily those in office, accountable to the realities of science and the principles of justice. So he's a fascinating person. Doing incredible work. And I remember sitting down at this dinner with him. And at the time, I was doing a lot of writing about the local food movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept picking his brain and asking him, you know, what is it that we can do? I mean, I buy from the farmers market every Saturday. And he's like, that's great. But until policy changes, nothing will change.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, but what, like, we started, my husband rides his bike. We don't use the two cars. This summer, he's riding his bike to school. Like, that's helping, right? Right, Bill? And he's like, yeah, that's fantastic. But honestly, this is a policy issue. And I kept questioning him, like, well, I only drink local beer. Doesn't matter. Write your congressman. Well, I only...
Really?
You know, I only turn the heater on, like, in the middle of November when we just can't stand it anymore.
You guys, it's so true. That's it great. Is freezing in their house.
And it just was the most... I learned so much just in this little conversation because I was trying so hard to, like, matter. I wanted what my actions were doing to matter. And I do believe that they do. I believe...
Right.
You know, because what I do, my kids might end up doing, the people I surround myself, we're going to exchange stories and learn from each other, and all of us will start doing these things. However, we have to push anyone who holds a political office to take a stand on these issues. We have to. So that was just a small story about Bill McKibben. He probably is just like, oh man, Iowa's in trouble. This lady thinks she can just shop her way out of this mess at the farmer's market.
I get it. You get it. It's like, it causes me anxiety every time I dial the numbers to my Congress people. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to buy local beer.
So much easier. So much more fun. But we can. We can do our best to ensure that there is land, for one thing, for people to grow real food on. That's one way that this can play out on a local or national scale. We can do, you know, we can write letters. We can stand with others. The documentary Cowspiracy really woke me up to the industry, the beef industry. If you watch it, you'll be astonished to learn about the natural resources that mass food production requires. So educate yourself, keep your eyes peeled, and then make noise if you're seeing something that's not sitting right. I love how Aubrey in a previous episode talked about, you know, calling the congressmen and women, but being a little bit nervous about it. So, like, making sure to do it after hours so you just get the voicemail.
Right, like, exactly.
You know, I mean, that can be a way to act, but call and write an email and ask the question, where do you stand on polluting land, water, air, and on using these resources to raise tortured animals?
Right.
Ooh, am I getting like a little...
I mean, you're not going far enough in my book, so probably I'm not the best one to ask, let's be real. But I mean, I brought up the Dakota Access Pipeline earlier in this episode, and it is the perfect example that is most recent of civil disobedience with climate and land use in mind. I loved, they called themselves protectors instead of protesters. Mm-hmm. And I really loved that because they were protecting our natural resources that they, that they have every right to, right? As indigenous people. And I just thought it was such a powerful example of what we really, what we can do. And I think that should inspire everyone. If you're feeling passionate about something, it really should inspire you to protect it, whatever that might be.
Yes, absolutely. I think another thing that we can demand once we're kind of calling these people anyway and making our voices heard is we can demand the removal of the routine use of antibiotics from food production. This is another huge one that is directly affecting our health. It's affecting our water supply. So email or call with this question. Where do you stand on getting the routine use of antibiotics out of the food supply?
And then follow up with, I demand you stand the way that I believe, which is get rid of them. And I market, I'm a marketing person, you're a marketing person, so we see this for exactly what it is. The marketing of our of junk food to our kids is terrible. You know, we can work in our home by limiting the media that our children have access to or by talking to them about the messages they do receive and then live by example in terms of what we buy and what we consume. But we can also send an email or leave a message asking this question, what will you do to make sure all of the kids in my community grow up eating decent food?
Right. Yeah. And again, if you don't feel comfortable engaging with real people on these issues, because it's intimidating, Aubrey's suggestion in episode 80, find out phone numbers, call after hours, leave a message, write an email, even if you're shy or reticent about talking at length about these things, let your voice be heard.
Yeah, they do work for us, even though it feels like they don't. These politicians do work for us. They are supposed to represent us. So let them, right? Let them know how you're feeling.
Yep.
We, you and I, and many of our listeners, I'm sure, live through cold winters where fresh and local is really difficult, if not impossible, to find. But we also have listeners who hopefully will invite us over in the middle of winter where they have access to fresh and local all year long. We should definitely, I feel like, revisit this subject in spring. But for those of you in warmer climates, we would love to hear from you now. Do you still shop the farmers market year round, even though Bill McKibben says, first you call, then you shop?
First you call, then you shop.
What about community gardens? Have you heard of them? Are you guys participating in them? These are both great, simple ways to be food advocates. So whether you're gardening for your family or you're supporting programs that help others find healthy food, you guys, you're doing simple things. I know you are. So just take a second and congratulate yourself on those little things. Leslie, you're a foodie. I'm a foodie, right? We can agree on this. Let's talk about a few of our holiday foodie traditions and how we can make them, enjoy them, and know that in doing so, we're not exploiting anyone or ravaging our planet. You and I really like to speak.
We're bringing the drama. We are bringing the drama today.
As we discussed in our other mini, drama's okay when we're setting the stage for something.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to embrace it. So Leslie, let's start simple here. Give us some like foodie gifts.
Yes, so we give a lot of foodie gifts, actually. I'm heading to a dinner party tomorrow night, and I'm going to bring coffee. Pounds and pounds of coffee for the hosts and for my friends. So it's important when you're buying coffee to just look for producers that are avoiding herbicides, pesticides, that are not depleting the earth's resources and using harsh things that harm the environment, and that they treat workers well. I have literally had conversations about this with the owners of my favorite coffee shop.
Of course,
which
you have.
It's a Dunn Brothers, which is a national chain, but it's like locally franchised. But they have given me their assurance that they value these things as much as I do. So, talk to these people. Talk to the person that you're buying the coffee from. Look not just for the fair trade label when it comes to coffee, but also the Rainforest Alliance label. It's a certification that's main purpose is to teach growers how to protect the environment and the animals that live there. If you're set on Starbucks, totally fine. Just under 10% of their coffee that they produce is classified as fair trade. So they come out with different blends every once in a while. But if you're wanting to buy Starbucks, buy a pound of the Italian roast, because that is always fair trade. Otherwise, just buy local and look for those fair trade labels, that Rainforest Alliance label, and vote with your dollars.
Vote with your dollars. Absolutely.
Yeah. Stocking stuffers, we love to give the kids chocolate in their stockings. And also, thank you, Laura Ingalls Wilder. We always put like a grapefruit and an orange in their stocking.
I'm sure the kids are really grateful to Laura Ingalls Wilder, too.
No. It always goes right back in the fruit bowl, but we do it every year. And I can make sure that both are produced ethically.
You can.
So, again, we can look for fair trade chocolate. We can look for organic fruits. And keep it simple with the food gifting, too. I feel like in all places in our American lifestyle, we have the tendency to overconsume. And so I have come to a place of peace in that I'm okay with giving like a little bit of chocolate, because it's going to be really, really good chocolate. It's going to be slave-free. It's going to be ethically sourced. And I feel much better about giving just a little bit than giving a bunch of the other stuff. So this can even work, you know, with your budget, just trying not to overconsume.
Yeah, I agree. Why do we need, like, buy three, get the fourth for free? I love what you said there. Just focus on maybe not buying four things of candy bars, but really, really good, ethically sourced one bar of chocolate.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
It's true. And again, you and I, we want listeners to understand that we don't do this perfectly.
Nope.
On any given day, you will likely see me with a venti coffee. It's probably true. Not always going to be Italian roast either. No one needs that much coffee, but it's something I keep talking about and thinking about and hoping to just figure out. And that's what we're doing here. We're just trying to figure it out.
So. Exactly. Okay, so that was gifting. Now let's talk about eating, how you and I are going to create this little revolution in our homes, right? As I mentioned before, part of the reason that my family went plant-based in our diet a few years ago was political. So every meal cooked in my house is a small act of rebellion and resistance, and I am okay with that. I can honestly tell you, too, that there is a delicious plant-based alternative to almost everything you're planning to serve during the holidays. So, Leslie, I know your family eats lasagna on Christmas Eve, correct? And I got to tell you that, not to toot my own horn, but I make the best vegan lasagna. And it's super easy, too. I make it for my friends who are not plant-based and they always want the recipe. It's lasagna noodles, a little non-meat red sauce, some pesto. Now, pesto is traditionally made with Parmesan, so we substitute the Parmesan with nutritional yeast, a delicious, delicious, healthy alternative to cheese. It's amazing. I'll add the link in our show notes. It calls for a lot of the Daiya shred cheese, but I don't even think you need it. If you don't want kind of the more processed cheeses or whatever, fake cheeses, that's fine. You don't even need it. It's so good without it. Anyway, I just upped the increase of pesto. So try that.
Okay.
And then for us, on our Christmas Eve, we always do personal homemade pizzas. The kids get to choose their own toppings. There's a company called Beyond Meat, and they make a really great meat substitute that's made mostly from pea protein, so there's actually not a lot of processing. Some of the meat substitutes are very processed, and so they're not actually all that good for you, but Beyond Meat makes a great substitute. So we'll have a veggie option for the kids. We'll do the Beyond Meat with a little taco seasoning for those who want kind of a taco pizza. And then we do use the Daiya shreds as, you know, that's the non-dairy cheese for the topping. Although sometimes, you know, especially if Sintayu is up in the house and she can't do soy or any of that, we just don't put any of that cheese on the topping and we just have the pizza sauce and our toppings. No cheese, right?
Delightful.
It's delightful. And we also, we do pancakes on Christmas morning. We do them. You can do those vegan, you know, those are super easy to do vegan. And Leslie, good news. We've talked about the sweet potato casserole that I make and that you love that was originally created by Paula Deen and was on the opposite spectrum of vegan with like three sticks of butter, but I'll make it vegan with some substitutions, maybe a little more sugar, you know, I'll work some magic and it tastes equally delicious. Like there are such easy ways to make your favorite holiday dishes with a little more, you know, ethically produced ideals in mind.
Yeah. A little more rebellion inside.
We love rebellion inside. So we're not going to be perfect food advocates every single time. Mm-mm. We're going to sometimes buy non-organic fruits and veggies. Leslie, I know you and I love you so much. You have really great vegan intentions in that big old heart of yours, but you're probably going to eat a steak from time to time that came from a non-grass-fed cow that's full of antibiotics.
Like once or twice a year, maybe like once sometime this year, it's going to happen. You're
particularly tired, your mom will tell you to eat a cheeseburger and you'll do it. I mean, these things will happen, right? And sometimes we'll be really stressed and that almond joy in the checkout line is just going to look so delicious and we're going to buy it, right? However, when you know better, you do better. And if you make these small changes in the way that you eat and you gift food this holiday season, like you can enter the food revolution just one step at a time. And this can really become something big.
You can enter the food revolution. In fact, we dare you to.
Oh, I like that.
We dare you to engage your mama bear in the kitchen by thinking about the food that you consume, the way it's produced, and the ultimate impact on not just your body, but on the earth and on the earth's people. We dare you to seek out products that are ethically sourced, that encourage a living wage, that don't exploit laborers or disrupt progress. A piece of chocolate made by a child laborer just isn't worth it. But when you know better, you do better. We have a great privilege of using our dollars to spread waves of compassion and goodness, and we dare you to yield that spending power in big and small ways. We're not going to solve all of the problems with our national or global food system, but with a little bit of thoughtfulness, maybe a few phone calls or emails to your congressmen and women, a little bit of Mama Bear momentum, I think we can make a dent from right where we are. Mm-hmm. We dare you to keep this in mind as you enjoy the festivities and gather with your loved ones over beautiful and delicious meals this holiday season and beyond. You have so much power in so many parts of life, Mama Bear. It's an honor to see you engaged.
It so is. I love that. What do you guys do? What are you seeing on the ground? How are you being little food industry rebellion people, right? Like, how are you joining this? We would love to know. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. Let us know. Leave a comment there or email us at mamabeardares@gmail.com. We love reading questions and comments that you've had on the podcast. So do that as well. And then you guys, are you shopping on Amazon? It's totally fine. So am I. Just got a package mid-podcast recording, actually.
I think a couple, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
We had a meeting earlier, and I'm pretty sure you had at least one other delivery today.
It's true. I love this time of year. It's so fun to see boxes show up at your door, right? Make sure you go to our website first, mamabeardarespodcast.com. There's a little banner at the top. You just have to click that link. And it takes you straight to your Amazon page. It will not look any different to you. So don't think that it's not working. But when you do that, just a little bit of every one of your purchases goes back into the podcast. We get to kind of make sure that more people are hearing from these amazing women we get to interview on Monday. So it really helps us out more than you can possibly imagine. So make that small little change in how you buy from Amazon, and we would be so appreciative of that. Also, Leslie, we haven't asked them to go to iTunes right now and leave a review. We haven't asked you to do that for a while, I miss it. I miss it. When we don't mention it, people forget. So stop forgetting. Go to iTunes right now. Leave us a review.
Do us a favor. That'd be great.
Yeah, you guys have so much fun. We can't wait to hear from you, but stick around or come back on Monday, rather, where you'll hear from another incredible woman you might not have heard of before.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. Have a great week.